Good afternoon, Ms. Deegan. You know that what time it is. It's time for Torn Into, your show for information, news, and more for this October 14th, 2022. A couple of things I got to say before I get into it. First, if you're watching, if you're listening to the show and would like to watch the show, it repeats itself on Facebook on WVS 103.7 The Beat or M106. Or if you would like to get on and ask questions today of our guests, Will Snyder and Miss Nancy Wang will be on today. You can do that via Facebook, WVS 103.7 The Beat and M106. Just a quick thing before I get my guest on. I have to say last week we took a trip to Orlando to see the other radio station and how our staff pulled off a concert. I want to take this opportunity to say to the staff, to PA, to Rob, to Mion, to everyone that was down here, Lady J, for maintaining the station here. I am so proud of you guys and what you guys do. You work very hard. No one knows how hard you guys work. And as vice president of West Michigan Community Health Network, it was an honor to be down there, and it was an honor to see what you guys pulled off. And I am so grateful for that. And with that said, I want to thank John Covington for covering for me last week. And my twin, how you doing, Pastor Burns?
I'm good, my brother. How are you?
Good. You were busy, too, last week. Oh,
man, had a rough week. Had a funeral Friday and a memorial service Saturday, so a rough weekend. But yeah, I'm good to be back.
I have one tomorrow, man. I'll be one tomorrow. Yeah. The Dow Jones is taking a hit. The NASDAQ is down 2.29%. Don't worry about it, people. Don't look at your 401ks, like Mr. Snyder said. Because, when it's in the red, that means some people are selling, other people are buying.
There you go.
So, you know, don't. And you know what? To be honest, the Dow needed an adjustment, and it's getting the one right now. I know people are worried about inflation, but it was going to happen, so. But let's get into our show. Our guest today is Mr. Will Snyder, our first guest. He was on the show before. Very pleasant guy. Him and I have a lot in common. And so as we say on this show, put your hands together for Mr. Will Snyder. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again. It's great to be back on Torn Into.
You made it through the primary successfully.
Ooh, it was a close one, but we did it.
it was a close one, but you still prevailed. So let's get right into, I guess my first question is that because that race, it was so close, what did you learn from that experience?
Well, you know, it's something that you've been through before.
Twice.
Unfortunately, it wasn't on the end that I came out on for you, but it was a very hard fought race with three very quality candidates. Two of them who I know very, very well and consider to be friends. Unfortunately, you know, towards the end, there was some negative stuff that started to fly, as typically does. But we were able to take a couple days off afterwards, brush ourselves off, rest up, and I've been trying my best to bring folks together in Muskegon in the Democratic Party, because we've got a lot more at stake than just the 87th House District. There's so much at stake across our entire state, and right here in Muskegon for our county commission candidates, where we've got, you know, mass chaos going on at the Hall of Justice in downtown Muskegon with some of these mega county commissioners that need to see the door. So
that's another show. That's another four shows.
That's a couple hour show, right?
That's several hours of show. But you know, we want to talk to those individuals, and for some reason we can't get them on. We want to hear what they got to say. But anyway, this is your show today, Pastor Burns.
Why don't you tell folks, I know from going to primary to now the general election, how has your campaigning been different?
Yeah, so like I said, we took a couple days to rest off. We didn't take long, and we are we're leaving no stone unturned here in Muskegon. Mm-hmm. We're still taking nothing for granted. We're out knocking doors, putting up signs. God loves yard signs. I tell you, I cut my hand this morning putting one in the ground. I
said, oh, man.
This is going to be a lot. But so we're still doing the work here locally, making sure that people get that message out. People say that this is a safe Democratic seat. I'm not going to take that talking point. I'm taking that for granted. There is no such thing as a safe Democratic seat or a safe Republican seat. Right. All seats, I believe, should be contested. Mm-hmm. We've had, I think, five forums now of some kind hosted by neighborhood associations and other things. My opponent has only showed up one time. I hope he's okay. We haven't seen him in a while. I don't know why he's afraid to come talk to some folks, but just last week we had a group of retired teachers, and this is not the MEA, not a union group. It's a more conservative group, Michigan Association of Retired School Personnel. Mm-hmm. No Republican candidates showed up. What is so scary to talk to a group of 150 retired school teachers? I don't know.
But, the same thing is what's so scary, not trusting the media. We're of course called media, but the thing is that we try to give people the opportunity to tell their side of the story. What's so scary about telling your side of the story? I don't get.
Exactly. And I just to touch base on that education issue, because we had the forum with the teachers last week, my opponent, the one thing that we do know from him following his social media stuff is that he's a fan of weaponizing our schools and making teachers carry in schools, which is very, very scary thing for me. I don't see the results behind that. It's a very, far out there thing. And I think it's something we need to talk about, because that's not how we make, our schools safer.
That would have been a good group to hear that discussion.
It would have been a great group. But
to get some really good feedback, that would have been
Now you talk about your experience.
Yeah. So as we talked about before, but I'll just talk a little bit more here. I've worked for the last years for State Representative Terry Szabo in the seat that is very, very similar to the one that I'm running for. After redistricting, there's some minimal changes. But so I've worked for him for the last 6 years, which I think is the thing that sets me apart from my opponent now and my opponents in the primary, is the experience of working in that office, the very office I'm running for. Mm-hmm. Not only having the local connections, being on the ground here with local elected officials, municipal leaders, nonprofits and groups, just being available and visible in the community, but also having the connections in Lansing so that we can get stuff done and do the job on day one. In the era of term limits, I think it's a big deal to be effective out of the gate. This incoming year in January in the House, we're looking at a minimum of, I believe, 58 new members in the state House. Wow. Out of 110. That's crazy. that's a huge turnover. I believe that'll be the highest since term limits. And it's going to take, some time for people to get comfortable and understand the legislative process, let alone find the bathroom, hire staff, and, be able to answer the phone, commute back and forth to district. And I think because of my experience working for the last couple of years in that office, I have, not only one foot ahead, I think we're leaps ahead of some of the other folks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, I was a union rep and a union steward. I worked for UFCW. My mom passed away when I was in high school, which kind of changed my career path. While my friends went off to college full-time, I went to work full-time, went to community college and got really, really involved in my local union, which, you know, in turn did lead to some politics. So that's how we got
What are the odds? We were talking about this a little bit. What are the odds of in Lansing, House and Senate change flipping?
Yeah, since our primary on August 2nd, our team and myself have launched the Will Snyder Majority Fund, which is something I'm very, very proud of. As I said, we're leaving no stone unturned here and taking nothing for granted, but we're also in a unique position because our opponent doesn't seem to be really out there and campaigning and making this a serious race, that we're able to do a little bit of traveling across the state to help some of our friends, our Democratic friends, more specifically our labor-friendly Democrats. And in the House, we need four seats to flip, three to tie, four to flip. And with reproductive freedom, workers' rights, and democracy on the ballot, everyone is ready to vote in November. I think Michigan has the opportunity to be one state that has some Democratic wins. Across the country, I think that's going to potentially be a harder thing to swallow. But in Michigan, the governor's numbers continue to be, 10 points or better above Dixon. And if she is able to get 54.5% or more of the vote statewide, I think there's going to be some coattails that are able to possibly flip some of these legislative seats across the state. We need four in the House. The Senate is, I think they need three, but there hasn't been a Democratic state Senate since 1982. Mm-hmm. And which that's going back a ways. That's my lifetime. And the path to majority in both chambers goes through West Michigan. 12 years ago, Grand Rapids, there was one Democratic House seat. After the latest redistricting, I'm pretty confident that we're going to have five Democratic House seats in Kent County out of the city of Grand Rapids.
Wow.
Republicans appear to have abandoned those seats and are not investing. They're investing elsewhere. We got a competitive Senate race here with my former boss and Senator Bumstead, a competitive Senate race in Grand Rapids with Representative David LeGrand and Senator Mark Huizenga. Yeah. So these are all within a 45-minute drive of my front door. Mm-hmm. So I'm helping a lot of these folks out. And also, we've got another candidate down along the lakeshore. They call it the Staircase District. After redistricting, I think it's probably one of the most interesting districts to look at. It goes from Saugatuck to the Indiana border along along the lakeshore. It's one municipality wide, about 6 miles wide and 112 miles long, which is crazy. But it's a very competitive seat, and we have a very labor-friendly candidate there, and Joey Andrews, who's a friend of mine who works for the Michigan AFL-CIO, and I'm hoping we can pull him across the finish line as well.
Oh, fresh news off the wire. Georgia launches investigation in Warnock's church following report from news. Just came out. So anyway,
Beth Burns. we'll have to talk about that later. Will, you were talking with the last redistricting. How would you say that's being played out in this current election?
Yeah, I will say what it does is it makes more seats than ever competitive, or what should be competitive. Mm-hmm. We're playing, both sides are playing in more seats than we've had to in a long, long time, upwards of 20 in the House. I'm not as familiar with the Senate stuff, but upwards of 20 in the House. And what you see is if you look at generic polling in a lot of these races, at least a month or month and a half ago before the crazy ad blitz and mailbox blitz started, that, you know, you do the polling and it's tied. People are 50-50 and they're 48-48 or whatever they are. And then you start to get the message out on our candidates and their candidates. And then you see, you know, our numbers do go up, which we have a lot of faith in the process and people believing in democracy. Some of these folks that we're running against, they don't. They're not willing to say that, you know, or acknowledge that the 2020 election was unequivocally fair and not fraudulent. And they're not willing to go as far as say that, you know, in the cases of rape, incest, or life of a mother, that abortion is should be allowed. Mm-hmm. And people, by and large, are on the other side of those issues. And I just hope and I pray every day that people will wake up and smell the coffee on election day and go out and vote. Because when we vote, we typically win. You know, we've got a candidate for statewide office for attorney general who is being investigated by our own prosecutor here in Muskegon County, who was appointed a special mm-hmm. prosecutor by Attorney General Dana Nessel, because he was, you know, doing his own testing on election machines that count votes, because he doesn't believe that the election was fair. And he was out there rigging those machines up. That's kind of a scary thing. And people don't, like, realize this. It's not in the mainstream.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got some candidates locally and for statewide office that, you know, the Republican Party of 10 and 15 years ago doesn't exist anymore.
No.
These are not mainstream folks. And I'm not a partisan guy. I oftentimes get criticized by my own party for working with the other side, for having those relationships, working across the aisle, which is something I'm proud of, because that's how you get stuff done. You know, compromise is not a dirty word. We don't all go in our corner and just stay there. But when your candidates are this extreme, it's kind of scary.
And It's tough. Pastor Burns.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's kind of made it weird. You have like Republicans and this other breed of people, again, the anti, you know, election folks. We know they split the Republican Party, and I guess we kind of wait to see how it's going to play out in the election, if folks are going to come back home and vote, you know, Republican, or where they're going to go. How much are you seeing like Proposal 3? How much are you seeing that driving your election and as well as some of the other races?
Yeah, I think Proposal 3 is very important. I think women are upset and are going to show up to vote. And I think that the deciding factor for a lot of these races, I'm pretty confident that Proposal 3 is going to pass. I'm in support of Proposal 3. Mm-hmm. The polling suggests it's near 60% or above, which I don't always trust polling anymore. But
don't trust polling.
That margin of error first, yeah.
With that said, I think what a lot of these races are going to come down to are Republican women and how do they vote. Their husbands might think they're voting one way, but how do they really vote when they go into the ballot box? And people are fired up. They're ready to vote, especially in my district when I'm out talking to folks, which is a typically a little bit more leaning district, a Democratic district. But it's something I'm seeing in other spots across the state, rural areas, and some Republican areas too. People are frustrated because, a group of, let's just say, white male politicians making decisions about women's health care is, not going over well.
So. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other issues that you're hearing out in the streets?
Yeah, obviously you're hearing about inflation and gas prices, which is tough, especially when OPEC decided last week to, quit producing a couple billion
gallons. 2 billion a day.
A day. That's tough. I think realistically, we need to talk about that these oil or these gas prices have a direct impact on Ukraine or from Ukraine and from the Russian invasion and Putin. And there's certain things that we can and cannot do, but that's, this is being driven by the Russians, in my opinion. And I don't think as Democrats we talk about that enough. But so that's obviously out there important. Talking about the high cost of prescription drugs, insulin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is something we talked about before when I was on. Just we always talk about roads and infrastructure, roads and infrastructure. We can travel anywhere across the state right now. We can go to Grand Rapids. It's going to take an extra 20 minutes to get there. But we need to talk about local roads and infrastructure on the streets that we drive on every day. Because we have a significant opportunity to invest in that in the next year and a half, as we still have surplus money in the state budget, at $7 billion. And we need to make sure that we are giving our local municipalities an opportunity to make change in the lives of everyday citizens, because you shouldn't have to worry about popping out a tire driving down your local neighborhood road. And that's, you know, it's happened to me just this spring, on Sanford Street. And it shouldn't be that way. So,
as coming out, if you win, what are the top things that you think need to be addressed, not only in this area, but in Michigan as a whole?
Yeah. Statewide. Well, it's going to depend whether or not we have the gavel in our hand, which I'm hoping we do, and we're going to institute a working class agenda. You know, we must go back to the roots of the Democratic Party and focus on pocketbook issues to improve lives of everyday people. Far too many people, right here at home and across the state, work too hard. Many multiple jobs and are unable to get ahead. So we need to invest in workforce and talent development programs to ensure that we are attracting employers to move to Muskegon, to move to Michigan, so that we have a talented workforce leads to jobs coming in, high paying quality jobs. And, you know, we've seen some of that with the SOAR fund that was created earlier this year, that the investment in some battery plants for GM. And that's a big deal, because these new plants are, you know, Michigan's the automotive industry capital of the world. We can't fall behind because of electric vehicles. We still need to be the leader so that we're on top, because it still takes suppliers all across the state in manufacturing to supply that industry, even for GM. So it's exciting that we have these new plants coming in. It's exciting that the SOAR Fund also last week or 2 weeks ago approved a $60 million project for a wastewater line at Muskegon County Wastewater going out into Ottawa County to service some of the dairy farms out in the Coopersville area and Swanson Pickle. And they're talking that investment's going to create, new jobs out there, because there was – some of these people had met their businesses had met the they couldn't do anymore because there was nowhere to go with the wastewater. So they couldn't expand. So like Fair Life in Coopersville that makes milk that you see in the grocery store. There's possible expansion there too now because of that investment in the infrastructure.
What are the odds of getting the gas tax reduced down a little bit? I was just down in Florida and gas prices are down there a lot cheaper. I was surprised. $3.342 compared to what we're paying in Michigan.
Yeah. I don't personally see movement on that until potentially next year with the divided legislature and the governor, simply because people don't want to play nice and talk to each other. There has been proposals though out to, instead of lowering the gas tax, to do a with the surplus that the state sees, to do a $500 gas and groceries rebate to working families, people making less than $100,000 a year or something like that, capping it at a certain level and handing out a gas and groceries rebate check. I would be supportive of that. The governor has proposed it. Legislative Republicans have refused to even discuss it. So it's unfortunate. The biggest thing that I'd say is, since the end of June, the House, I believe, is only meant for 2 days. I know it's an election year. I get it. In an election year, they do go on vacation in June and August, and they go out and campaign, and that's the way it works. And then also typically in October. I understand that. However, this is like an all-time low for the amount of days in session.
That is ridiculous.
I do believe, because of the Senate's the same way. I don't know the exact numbers. I think they've had a couple more days, but that they're scared of losing their majority, and that's why they're out. And that's why they're out campaigning. So
that's like 50% of a 2-year term almost.
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy. Well, if people wanted to find out more about your opinions, your thoughts, how can they find out more about you?
Yeah, we're at electwillsnyder.com and on Facebook, electwillsnyder. Everything that we hand out, though, on the streets, door to doors, has my cell phone number on it, because I think it's very important to be available to the constituents. Mm-hmm. And that's a policy that's helped us get this far, and it's something that I believe very strongly in, just being available to people, because sometimes people need somebody to listen to them. Yeah. And I just think that's really important. So hit me up if you need help. That's something that our office, if we win this thing, is gonna excel in constituent service, in helping people, navigate the red tape that sometimes comes along with state government.
Pastor Burns.
Well, we got about 2 minutes left. What's the final word you want to leave with our listeners today?
Well, I just think, we hear every 2 years, we hear this is the most important election of our lifetime. Well, I'm here to say I think it is this time. I really believe it, because mm-hmm. these are some very extreme candidates, unfortunately, that the other side has put up. And I just think it's important that we get out to vote, and we vote in mass, and make sure that our voices are heard, so that we have a seat at the table. Like we talked about, we've got candidates for statewide office that are, under investigation for potential tampering with election equipment. Mm-hmm. That's scary, and it shouldn't be the case, but it is. So we need to make sure that our voters are educated. That's why we're out knocking doors, mm-hmm. knocking doors with the One campaign over on Glade Street, Miss Patsy Petty, and making sure that we get out the vote to win on November 8th.
And that's why this show is done. People, I don't think you realize how close we are for democracy being
destroyed. Democracy is on the ballot. Democracy is on the ballot.
Take a second. I know we're over our time, but take a second to explain that, because I don't think people understand that.
As I said earlier, it's critical to have a thriving, a robust democracy, voting rights, elections. But a lot of these candidates believe that the 2020 election was not fair, that it was rigged. And, people are under indictment for tampering with election equipment, and they're running for office. They put up a separate slate of electors for the presidency, people that they tried to storm into the Capitol to seat their own electors to change the results of the 2020 election. Including one of them was a sitting state rep from up north. That's scary. And I know Nancy Wang from Voters Not Politicians is going to be on next, and she's going to talk about Proposal 2, which I fully support. And she can talk a little bit about that, because, voting should not be a question. It shouldn't be difficult to vote. It shouldn't be a thing where we are scaring people that the system doesn't work. The system works. Mm-hmm. As we recount, I don't remember how many times we did recounts and audits here in Michigan, but I tell you what, nothing changed. Every time it was the same, nothing changed. Mm-hmm. Our elections are free, are fair, and I just hope that people get out and vote on November 8th.
Will Snyder, want to take the time to thank you, and give him that information one more time.
electwillsnyder.com, Facebook, @electwillsnyder, or Will Snyder for state representative. And I hope I can earn your vote on November 8th to represent Greater Muskegon and make sure that Muskegon has a seat at the table.
All right, sir. We'll talk to you soon. Good luck.
Thank you, Pastor Burns. Thank you, Greg. And hope to be back on the program again
later. Absolutely.
All right. Take care, Will.
Take care. Okay, we are waiting for our second guest. And pray that she we are able to get a hold of Nancy Wang. Just a couple things. And then Pastor Burns, are you surprised that the polling numbers are so dismal for the Democrats across the United States?
You know, yes and no. You know, we have this weird thing happening in our country, which is
maybe we can get Will back on this. Hey, Will, can we get you back on?
I'm back. I'm still okay. Here.
Are you surprised about the polling numbers?
On a national level, I would say no. Typically, you know, with, you know, the president in his first term, no matter the party, typically struggles. His party struggles in a midterm. And I think you're seeing that across the country. In Michigan, I think it's slightly different because of Proposal 3 being on the ballot, driving Democratic interest among female voters and Democratic interest in general. And you're also seeing that the governor's approval ratings are, the last poll I saw, she's at like about 52%, and President Biden is at like 39%. You know, she had a lull in her approval ratings during the pandemic, but people, including a lot of Republicans, have bounced back on that because they realized, you know, it was a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so I think that the polling, not surprised at a national level, if you look, and I'm not following it everywhere, but I mean, we talked briefly about Georgia earlier in the Senate race down there. I mean, I'm surprised that Walker's numbers are still as high as they are after what we've seen in the media the last couple of weeks.
Right.
But I guess the Heisman Trophy on the shelf kind of helps things.
Yeah, we're going to go on eBay and buy us one. Will Snyder, thank you for chiming in, and we'll take care, buddy.
No problem. Thank you. You guys have a great afternoon.
All right, you too. And speaking of, let's get right back right into it. Mm-hmm. Put your hands together for our guest, Nancy Wang. How you doing, Nancy?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good. Nancy, we had a lot to talk about. Thank you for getting on. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm the executive director of Voters Not Politicians. We're a grassroots group that formed in 2016 specifically to end gerrymandering. We wanted to get politicians out of what they were doing with redistricting and put independent citizens in their place to draw fair district lines. So that's why we have competitive elections that we're looking at this election.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pastor Burns.
And we just had a discussion about that with a candidate. Let me ask you this before we get into proposal two. Having a couple of elections since that 2018 proposal, how do you feel that proposal's worked out in terms of the races today? Do you feel like it's accomplished what you wanted to accomplish?
Yeah, we feel really good about where we're at. So if you think about where we were at 2017, we didn't have everyone able to cast an absentee ballot. Mm-hmm. And now, because of the 2018 reform, Prop 3, everyone can cast an absentee ballot for no reason. Mm-hmm. And that was tremendously popular. In 2020, we mm-hmm. saw 3.3 million absentee ballots. I think this year we're coming up upwards of 2 million absentee ballot applications submitted. And then, of course, you know, we ended gerrymandering, which for decades was keeping the Republican Party in power when they didn't have the majority of the votes. So, you know, we did these kind of reforms, you know, really in order to take our power back as voters. They're nonpartisan. They passed by overwhelming majorities. And we're looking to do the same this election to protect our fundamental right to vote.
Well, you have the other side saying, like they're doing with Proposal 3, they're saying the same thing with Proposal 2, that is too complicated. Tell us what Proposal 2 is and what Proposal 2 is not.
Great. So Proposal 2 is a constitutional amendment. Again, it's being put forward by a nonpartisan coalition, which includes Voters Not Politicians. So we were the group that ended gerrymandering in 2018. In 2018, there was that big voting rights amendment as well that we've been talking about. So, and that was put forward by Promote the Vote. Promote the Vote is a coalition itself of NAACP and League of Women Voters, a lot in ACLU, a lot of kind of voting rights, good government groups. It also includes, you know, things like the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce that signed on, Detroit Action, a lot of, I think there's 20 different organizations altogether. And we joined this coalition in order to put this voting rights proposal on the ballot. So it does two things. One is to protect our fundamental right to vote as voters. Right now, we don't have that protected anywhere in our Constitution. And what we want to make sure of is that politicians don't use voter suppression like they've been trying to do in other states, and frankly, like our own legislature has been trying to do in this state, to take away our right to vote because they think, you know, certain people shouldn't have the franchise because they don't think they'll vote for them. It also has a number of practical things that voters want, regardless of party or who they represent or who they support, which is like 9 days of early in-person voting. So you would get to vote in person, feed your ballot through on two different weekends, you know, before Election Day. That provides a lot of convenience for people. It provides, you know, drop boxes in every city to make sure that people who vote absentee have a way, an easy way to submit their ballot. So things like that.
Well, you're, if we don't do something like that, you'll find stuff like what happened in Texas, where you have one ballot box per county. And if you look at one ballot box in Houston, all of Houston, one ballot box, those possible things could happen. And this is something that helps address that, those kind of things, correct?
Absolutely. Right. So, you know, the thing about why voters are taking this step of, you know, we had to collect hundreds of thousands of signatures in order to put this on the ballot, and now we have to run a campaign to get people aware of it, is because it's so fundamental to voters, right, to all voters across the spectrum. But politicians are the ones that are trying to abuse our political system to keep themselves in power. So you'll see these really draconian, drastic voter suppression measures like, you know, closing all the polling places in a city, for example. And those are the kinds of things that we are going to protect against for ourselves, because we know, unfortunately, that there's a lot of power at stake. And so politicians are willing to go and suppress the vote, you know, in order to keep themselves in power.
Pastor Burns.
Some of the provisions, are they implemented different currently throughout the state, like some of the early voting absentee ballots? Is it up to each county how they do that, or each individual clerk?
Right. So that's one of the things that this addresses is, you know, drop boxes, for example, they're paid by the municipality. So in 2020, when we had, you know, COVID, again, record numbers of absentee ballots, but there were only drop boxes, like clerks weren't mandated to have any drop boxes in their city or county. And so some provided them if they had the funds or the will, honestly, and then some didn't, right? Okay. So in this proposal, it really deals with equity as well also. Equity as opposed to, you know, as it pertains to access. It provides prepaid postage, for example, you know, for every absentee ballot application and ballot. It, you know, allows people equal access or, you know, some level of minimum level of access to drop boxes. You know, like I said, it also provides, you know, more flexible time for people to be able to vote conveniently, you know, and then all of these things would be available to every voter, regardless of where you live or, you know, what party you support. And that makes, you know, that makes a difference. And the thing about this that's great and that kind of speaks to where we're at is all the voters overwhelmingly agree to these things, right? We want access. We want every eligible voter to be able to vote. But our politicians aren't doing these things legislatively because you know, it is better politically for them not to.
Some people have said, and I hate to repeat it, but I have to. Some people say that now this kind of legislation makes it where dead people and all that kind of stuff can have access to ballots and people can vote twice and all that kind of stuff.
Right. Of course, we've heard these things and, you know, they're being perpetuated by people that really are trying to, well, number one, they're trying to stop, you know, kind of nonpartisan, citizen initiated kind of pro-voter campaigns and proposals like ours. They're also trying to kind of sow mistrust so that they can actually, you know, they can actually build themselves a foundation upon which then they can, you know, suppress the vote, right? So if people, they're trying to get people to think like this part is not secure, this part is not secure, then they're going to try to, you know, kind of impose these restrictions based on, you know, what they've, you know, created of well, people doubt that, you know, this is secure. So now we have to impose these restrictions on voting. You know, the good thing is, you know, again, these arguments have been used before, and we've seen that Michigan voters outright reject them, right? So our elections are safe and secure. We ran 250 audits, right? Wow. Secretary of State's office, county level, local, 250 audits. And believe me, some people were looking everywhere they could for any sort of fraud. There was no fraud to be found, right? So, you know, people know as we're going door to door saying, hey, you know, are you aware of Prop 2? Please vote for it. And they know that our election system is safe and secure. I mean, and this is about kind of preserving, protecting the rights that we have and that we want from this kind of like conspiracy theory kind of laden, you know, attempts to in order to sow distrust itself.
Mm-hmm. Pastor Burns.
One of the provisions of this proposal is to allow funds to be donated for elections. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So the thing about Michigan is that, you know, chronically and historically, the legislature has not adequately funded elections, right? So we have almost 1,600 local clerks. They're all trying to do their job. Mm-hmm. You know, some have more funds than others, right? They're supposed to get a fully funded apparatus for them to, you know, make sure that everyone can vote in their jurisdiction. They're supposed to be fully funded by the legislature. Like that is their job. Mm-hmm. And they don't, right? And they haven't. And all these clerks, you know, they have an association. They've been pleading for the legislature every single time in order to please fully fund. And this is across the board. I don't care who you are, what party, you know, please fully fund elections. So that's number one, is that the clerks and, you know, these election administrators are strapped for cash. Mm-hmm. And that's especially true in, for example, 2020, when we had COVID and you had, you know, you needed more people to work, right? You needed to pay people more because people weren't willing to go, you know, in person in places. You needed extended hours that some clerks provided. You needed PPE, right? Mm-hmm. And so these were the things that, you know, clerks went and they had outside help in order to get those things done. So they took those, you know, they took those funds, right? Mm-hmm. Another thing that would kind of fall under this is, you know, things like donated polling place stations, right? So like churches or, you know, schools, mm-hmm. Those things are donated, you know, yes. by these entities. And then the clerks are able to accept those. Mm-hmm. So what's different than what we currently have is that under this proposal, everything would have to be transparent. Right. So if the DeVos's were coming in and trying to spread money through Republican, you know, districts, then we would see who was behind, you know, that sort of funding. And you can believe that there would be, you know, kind of public pressure on our legislature to kind of even the playing field. Right. Mm-hmm. So the thing I think, you know, that's major here and important is the transparency piece, which we don't currently have that we want.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Pastor Burns.
Yes. Michael Anthony Smith says, voter fraud is found to be less than 1% of the voting population.
Your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, that's another thing, right? So, you know, just because you repeat these things, unfortunately, they sound, you know, they become sounding like they're true, but they're not, you know, and we've, you know, the legislature itself, the Republican majority itself in the Senate, you know, undertook a months-long investigation themselves, and they're really trying to find fraud to kind of back up these claims, and they couldn't find any. So, you know, things I did, you know, people, and I won't go through them because I don't want to repeat them myself, but these are not true, you know. There's no kind of exploitation of anything, you know, in our current laws, and you know, what we're part of our message out there, like us and, you know, these good government groups is don't be dissuaded, like exercise your right to vote, you know, have your voice counted. That is the important thing. Let's focus on that. So that our will is done, right? The people's will is done.
Nancy, it's 2022, and you're looking at legislation that you guys are proposing that would not only help one group, but help all citizens. Why do you think you guys are getting flack?
Well, number one, it's a constitutional amendment, and that is really important because we have the right as people in order to do the work ourselves and protect ourselves when our legislature won't, right? So our group, we haven't existed, we only existed, you know, we started in 2016. Why? Because the, you know, the process was so broken, right? And being manipulated by politicians that we felt like, you know what? We as voters, now we have to step in. And there's a reason why we preserved this power for ourselves. You know, the Michigan Constitution starts with all political powers inherent in the people. So we gave some, you know, ability, some authority to the legislature to do some things for us. But when there's, you know, messing around with the entire structure and system and we have to fix that, then that's what we are doing. So I'm sorry, I got on to a little thing.
That's okay. And I stand corrected on it. Yeah, not legislation, constitution and amendment.
Yeah.
Okay, Pastor Burns.
Sorry.
You know, I look at the proposal and I imagine you find when you read this to most people, despite how they might politically affiliate, they kind of go, yeah, those are some, like some good things. And until they hear somebody who is on one side or the other say, do this or don't do that. Because you read them, and other than that concern about getting into the Michigan Constitution, which some people have, and no matter what, they don't want to touch the Constitution. But you read these and most people, I'm thinking most people probably respond like I do and go, yeah, those are, yeah, you thought some of those were protected. Now until you realize they vary with legislators and they're not our constitutional rights. But is that what you find, that most people hear them and kind of like, yeah, those sound like good ideas?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we have thousands of volunteers on the ground. Like, that's what we do. We have to, you know, we run on volunteers and we were collecting signatures. You know, we collected over 170,000 signatures. I have to, you know, plug my group because people are amazing. And so now we're knocking on doors. The same volunteers are knocking on doors. And when you're telling people, you know, first, they either know about proposal two and they're like, yes, you know, of course, right? Or they don't know about it. And then you talk for 30 seconds and they're like, yeah, I don't see the catch here, you know? And for anybody who's going to kind of just talking through each provision like we're doing, they're like, yeah, I don't understand, you know, what the controversy is. And it's because there's no actual controversy with the people with any of the provisions. And you kind of know that because you're looking at the people behind it too, right? Like people like Common Cause, you know, League of Women Voters, like the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce, you know, just endorsed. Like, these are not groups that are, you know, really out there, you know, doing things that people don't support and want, you know, overwhelmingly. So no, you know, we're not really seeing any concerns about any of the provisions, like, and that's by design, right? Like, we are voters. This is what voters want. And we're putting it on the ballot. You know, we have to get it passed. And so you have kind of, you know, a subset of all of the different kind of access issues, as well as, protecting the fundamental right, right? You have these kind of subset of access issues that everyone, you know, fully supports.
Now, say this passes, what would be the next step that you would like to see in getting more people out to vote?
Well, that's a good question. I think education is a really big one. You know, so no recent absentee voting, like, you know, said over 3 million people exercised that right, you know, in 2020. But there are millions more people that didn't. Right. And some of it is, you know, we're kind of address that. We're trying to address that now by saying, hey, did you know that you have these rights? You know, absentee ballot voting is a huge one because it's so convenient and people can sit at the dinner table and like actually read through it and figure out who's running for what, you know. And someone said, you know, that they're saying, oh, it's really nice too, because I get to sit with my kids. And then we get to talk about why there's so many races, like who's running, you know, why is this one important, you know? So it becomes this kind of, you know, part of your tradition of your civic, you know, kind of engagement and stuff that's really important. And so I think there are other things like that are in this proposal that are just as important, right? So like 9 days of early voting in person, like, what does that mean? You know, telling people, hey, did you know that 2 weekends before, you know, election day, and then all through that week, and then the next, you know, weekend before that Tuesday, you can vote in person. Like, did you know that, you know? And part of what we've been doing since 2018 is educating not just voters, but also community groups, so we could like spread the word, you know, and also clerks themselves to say, hey, you know, did you know either that you have this responsibility, you know, or that you have this option?
What do you say to the people that that I'm the traditionalist, and I believe that you should just come out on one day to vote on that Tuesday? And what do you say to individuals like that?
Well, first I say, you know, if that's how you'd like to vote, then go for it, right? Like if you like the idea of going on Tuesday, you know, that second Tuesday, November, and that's sacred to you, then go do that, right? But I would also say, hey, some of these kind of restrictions on how we vote actually disenfranchise people. Mm-hmm. So if there's a person who's eligible to vote, right, and we have these kind of common sense, you know, ways of making it, you know, convenient for people, then why not support that, right? So what's happening is if you don't have these provisions protected for people, then you have people who are eligible just but cannot exercise their franchise. You know, things like postage, like they matter, you know? People have been bashing, you know, kind of voter ID and saying, well, you know, everybody has an ID, so why even have, you know, people having to sign this legal affidavit if they don't have their ID? Well, it's because some people don't have their ID, right? And that matters, right? So because those people are otherwise eligible to vote. So, you know, and those are 13,000 people in Michigan in 2020. Like, you know, those are people, and this is part of what we're building is a strong democracy where no one is disenfranchised just because of access.
Pastor Burns.
Yeah, I think that kind of gets back to the whole concept of is it a person's right to vote, or, you know, should there be some hurdles so that they have this privilege to vote? And it's a right. Yeah. Which I think your group was saying. You talk about the absentee and the other ways other than voting on the election day. I think you had some provisions for or codified some provisions for military ballots as well.
Yeah, that's another thing too. You know, how many people does it affect? Well, it affects the people who it affects, right? It affects military people who are serving overseas. And what used to happen is, fine, you send your, you know, your ballot through the international mail. Like, I don't know how long that takes, right? But if it's not accepted, if it's not kind of received by your clerk's office before election day, then it doesn't count, right? So you could have sent it, you know, wherever you're serving, and because of the mail, you know, outside your control, it doesn't count because it didn't get there in time. Mm-hmm. So what our proposal says is, you know, we recognize this, and we said, as long if you're in the service of the military for our country, and if you put your ballot in the mail by election day, then it counts, right? Mm-hmm. It counts as long, you know, it makes its way through the system. But so that's another way, you know, that we are, there are things that some people need and some people don't. If you don't in the military, you know, you don't need that, but there are people who are being denied access because of that.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned being at the kitchen table. We do election coverage here, and that's what we did. Me and my wife, we got our ballot, sat at the kitchen table, discussed issues, vote, and we've already turned in our ballots. And to me, I just see that there's so much, such a huge advantage of to having this to the people out there saying no, it this one I don't understand, and this one kind of goofy. Pastor Byrne, would you agree?
Yes, definitely. Again, you know, everybody doesn't pay attention to every single political cartoon and advertisement. So some people are walking into that ballot booth and seeing all these proposals, like, oh my God, what do I do? You know, and you know, you sit back there flipping a coin or whatever they're doing. Right. That's not the kind of democracy we want.
Right.
Are you amazed, Nancy, in 2022 that like the military voting that we're running on snail mail when we have so much technology that we can get this done so much faster? and efficiently.
Yes. Yes and no. Am I surprised? I'm dismayed for sure. Like, why is this, you know, why is this so hard? But then I'm also not surprised because our legislature is dysfunctional, right? And that's why people have to step in to protect ourselves. And one thing I'll say about the kitchen table too, it's like, we've been fighting so hard to defend our right to vote. And you're right, like it's our right to vote, right? Not a privilege, which is why this proposal, another reason this proposal is important. Mm-hmm. But we've been trying so hard just to like make sure we can vote, right? Mm-hmm. Like this proposal is part of this feeling among voters that voting and civic duty is like, it's part of what could be rich about our lives, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, why not celebrate the fact that we're voting? I have a, you know, 7-year-old and a 12-year-old, and I've been taking them out canvassing, you know, during the time of people. Mm-hmm. And so they're growing up this way. But like, you know, we get to talk about it, right? Like, you know, with my partner, with my kids, and like with our neighbors, and you get to talk about it for more than, you know, that 30 seconds that you have your ballot, you know. So I think that's important. And it's something our legislature, unfortunately, these days, because it doesn't benefit them, they won't do things to expand access like that to allow us to have that kind of process anymore, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Nancy, if people would like to find out what Proposal 2 is, what it isn't, and find out more information, how can they do that?
Sure, there's a couple ways. You can go to promotethevote2022.com, or you can go to votersnotpoliticians.com.
Last question to you, Pastor Burns.
Nancy, just a final appeal to folks that are out there. What do you want them to know? What do you want to tell them in the few minutes we have left?
This election is as important as any of that we've had, you know, and it's hard because every single election we're like, you need to vote. Oh my God, everything's on the line, but everything really is on the line for 22. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a midterm, but it's a setup for 2024, you know, and these are, you know, proposals are like, we're here in putting a fundamental right so that it's our right to vote doesn't get taken away, you know, and the election results aren't, you know, kind of manipulated or tried to in 24. So please vote. Please, you know, take 2022 just as seriously as any other election and let all of your friends and family know that they need to vote. They need to, you know, they need to vote in this one. It's not just like any other, you know, kind of midterm that may or may not matter. It actually matters. Your vote matters.
Nancy Wayne, thank you so much for being on 22. You have an outlet to come and talk to us anytime.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Take care. All right. That's, man,
you know
what we've been saying of making voting easy.
Yeah. It should be intuitive, but again, it's in people's interest to not make it easy. And that's not how our democracy should work.
The common thing that people said is that our democracy is in trouble. I mean, like lifeline IV trouble.
Yeah.
And if you don't get out and vote, there's no reason why you can vote at your table. You can vote early. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no reason why you need to get it done. Last statement to you, Pastor Burns.
I don't know if you remember this growing up, but I remember my parents going voting and I was thinking, I can't wait to do that. I remember my mom working at the polls and going up there, taking her lunch and, you know, those big machines with the curtain saying, I can't wait to do that. Mm-hmm. And I can remember turning 18 and being excited about my first time to vote. I hope it matters. Take your kids inside the polls, start talking to them about the candidates and the ballot issues. Have that discussion with your family and friends.
I did the same. I took all my daughters and had to go with me to vote and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, look, that's the end of the show. Went fast. Pastor Burns, you take care. I'll see you next week.
All right, brother.
People, go out, sow a seed in somebody's life. Do something good. You never know who you'll touch. Take care and God bless.
All right.